Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Active Radio KHII 88.9 FM Podcast. We really appreciate you joining us today. My name is John Hurt, and we're going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our community. By sharing knowledge through our conversations, we will try to impart some information you may need about what is happening in the Tularosa Basin and across southern New Mexico. So let's get to the interviews.
And good morning. It is 8:26. Joining me on the phone right now, the guy that gets a Christmas card from the governor, Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation. Good morning, Paul.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Good to be with you.
Well, good to have you with us, too, and stuff. So I'm shocked. I know you're shocked over the holiday to receive a Thanksgiving card from none other than Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham.
Well, yeah, it's true. I got it in my mailbox right before the Thanksgiving holiday. Now, just to be clear, this is a taxpayer-financed from the governor's office kind of card. This is not a personal, you're my best friend kind of card. So it's funny. It's just something I had a little fun with on social media. A few other folks that I guess I engaged with on social media also somehow received these cards. So I guess the governor's got a big list, and she sends out a lot of those cards. And whether you're a political ally or not, you can maybe, you too, can get a card from the governor.
How about that? I didn't.
Aww.
Aww, for me, lucky me. So, but, well, that's cool. Did you display it with prominence?
I haven't done anything with it yet, aside from kind of the social media aspect. Scanned it and put it up in on the Twitter feed and that kind of thing. So, No display yet. We really don't have a process in the Gessing family for Thanksgiving cards. Although it's something that maybe is becoming more common because so many organizations send out those Christmas cards that they get lost in the shuffle. So we'll see if she's got a separate mailing list for Christmas cards, and if I could score one of those too.
Boy, if you do, man, I tell you what, that'd be like awesome. So
yeah.
All right, well, hey, also over the Thanksgiving weekend, you discovered the hard way the Rail Runner app has correct information on it. Well, hey.
Yeah, so of course folks are familiar with the Rail Runner, the taxpayer financed train that came about during the Richardson administration, and it's obviously here in the Albuquerque area, but all taxpayers across New Mexico are paying for it, for the billions of dollars that project cost to build, and that the billions that it cost, and by billions I mean, you know, we're talking between the debt payments and the operational costs. We're talking, you know, $80 or so million every single year that we're pouring into this train. But I had designed to travel south of Albuquerque to go to a model train museum in Belen, which is the end of the line for the train south. I do take the train up to Santa Fe on a regular basis during the session, but really haven't taken the train to south very often because, you know, there's not a whole lot. I mean, Belen's a lovely little area, but it's not nearly as relevant to be in my line of work as Santa Fe. So get to the train station on Saturday and discovered that the Rail Runner app managed by the New Mexico Rail Runner Express was off by 20 minutes, and unfortunately it was off the wrong way, which means that the train had already come 20 minutes or so before I showed up.
Oh, no.
So I did alert the Rail Runner folks of this little problem, but boy, you talk about just, you know, it's, you got just a few jobs there, keep the trains running on time and let people know when the trains are running.
Yeah.
And here we are funding a taxpayer financed train that is not working in a timely manner in terms of its schedule.
Wow. Wow. We burned down airports for a mistake like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's one of the many problems with transit in general. And that does include planes. So it's just a physical fact. You have to get to the train station, the bus station, the airport to be on time. And, you know, for an airplane, you know, it's obviously a hassle to get through the TSA. A lot of people, I'm sure, found that out over the Thanksgiving holiday. But for a train to have an incorrect schedule on its app that people use to, you know, essentially schedule their trips, it's pretty inexcusable in my book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, ultimately, I drove down with the kids. And it was actually nice to have the flexibility of the car on that trip, so the kids missed out on the train ride, which, of course, you know, there is a little bit of a mythology and a pleasure of sitting there on a train and riding it, but mm-hmm. We also had more flexibility with our travel plans. So, you know, it's just one of many reasons why transit, taxpayer finance transit, does not fit the bill for our movement needs.
Well, let's just be honest with it. It's just another example why transportation should not be in the hands of any government.
There you go. Very well said.
I said it. There you go. Well, some folks, Paul, when you have certain beliefs, need to check the background before you take a picture. And Vice President Kamala Harris uses a gas stove, a natural gas stove, posing with her husband on social media. That was smart.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be such a big deal, but of course, the administration in which Kamala Harris serves, headed up by Joe Biden, has earlier this year, you know, said and ultimately backed off of, but it was clear that the Biden administration was not a fan of gas stoves. We had been talking about this for a while. Martin Heinrich, one of the cheerleaders for what they call electrify everything, which really means ultimately getting rid of things like gas stoves, gas furnaces, gas hot water heaters. Those are all on Heinrich's hit list. And quite frankly, if they're on Heinrich's hit list, they're on the Biden administration's hit list. And we, you know, saw that national news story back in the spring when the Consumer Product Safety Commission of the Biden administration floated what essentially was a trial balloon about banning gas stoves in new houses. And, you know, this is something that clearly was at least discussed internally by the Biden administration. The outrage, I think, in the media and among average citizens caused them to back off and decide not to do this. But it is funny, you know, it's not blatant hypocrisy or anything. You know, I don't blame Kamala Harris for having a gas stove, but it just shows that, you know, she's one of millions of Americans that has a gas stove in her house and that she's benefiting from that. So good for her to have that benefit there in her house. And, you know, we wouldn't be able to know about it if there was a picture of it that was with her and the vice presidential husband. I don't know the exact name, I forget, but her husband is in the picture as well, posing right next to their gas stove. So I'm sure that they had a delicious Thanksgiving dinner, thanks in part to natural gas.
There you go. Yeah. And that's one of the important reasons for natural gas right there. So
exactly.
There you go. Well, job growth in the energy sector is not a win for the economy, I know that oil and gas can be strong in New Mexico, so tell us what your thoughts are.
Well, yeah, it's the left wing and environmental advocates are very excited and touting the number of jobs created in various energy sectors, like so-called clean energy, wind and solar. And you know, it is something that occasionally there are areas within the oil and gas industry where you have significant job growth, and that's all driven by the market. But we all know that wind and solar are not market-based energy sources. They are driven by the political process and subsidies. And what I'm saying here is that when it comes to these sources of electricity, wind and solar, the job creation is a bug, not a feature. By that, I mean, it's a indicator that these are costly, that they are not really functioning as market-based sources of energy. So imagine, do a thought experiment. Imagine that you could get free electricity 24/7, 365, and that that requires nobody hitting the button, nobody in charge. It just came. Well, that would be optimal. That would be amazing for society. Well, every time you employ somebody, it raises the price tag of that energy source. And in the case of wind and solar, these are extremely intense industries when it comes to the number of people that need to be involved with them. Solar installations, solar manufacturing, the installation of wind and solar, then going up and managing the wind farm or the solar panels and repairing them, those require a lot of time and effort. And it's not a win for the economy to have those human resources consumed by essentially heavily subsidized, high-cost sources of energy. It is one of the political problems. You know, politics versus economics, it is a simple fact that politically it would be great if the current oil and gas boom were also resulting in more employees coming to New Mexico, because those people would vote for sane political issues in the state of New Mexico. The unfortunate reality is that those industries keep getting more and more efficient, which is why those industries are profitable, and wind, solar, not so much. So it's a double-edged sword if you factor in the politics, but ultimately the high number of employees in wind and solar is related to their lack of efficiency and lack of cost-effectiveness. And claiming that's a victory is simply put inaccurate.
Well, the only way you can really claim a victory is when there's a return on investment, and so far we have not seen any type of a return on investment from these alternative energy resources.
Not we, but they, some in that industry, and those industries have certainly experienced those benefits in their bottom lines. But yes, societally speaking, I think it has been very hard to see what real benefit we are getting out of wind and solar.
Yeah. Well, I'm loving this next story. Conservative Albuquerque City Councilor Dan Lewis and a majority of the council recently voted reform for the city's unelected air board. But sadly, Mayor Kaler said no. No. My idea goes forward. You cannot tell me what to do. He vetoed their legislation.
Yeah. Long story short is that when we were dealing with the Environmental Improvement Board and the regulations on electric vehicles, or that force electric vehicles on us, the Environmental Improvement Board was joined by the Albuquerque Bernalillo Air Quality Board, yet another non-elected group of people making important decisions. Now, to give you an idea of how far out to left field these folks are, while the governor's own appointed EIB just voted 3-2, the Albuquerque Bernalillo County Board voted 7-0 in support of the regulation. They're also facing regulations from other areas that even the University of New Mexico expressed concern about in terms of negatively impacting UNM's operation on main campus and the Health Sciences Center. So there are real concerns that this unelected board here as the biggest metro in the state is going to do things and have some powers that will kill jobs and destroy economic opportunity. So Councilor Lewis, he's the most conservative member of Albuquerque City Council, ran for mayor against Tim Keller when Keller won his first time. And unfortunately, Keller decided that this was not acceptable. So Lewis had passed this 5-4 through council, essentially not abolishing this board, but reining it in, providing additional accountability, providing additional transparency, and the mayor vetoed it. So it's just unfortunate that we have these unelected boards with so much power and that they have zero accountability. So, you know, when these people are out passing regulations and adopting rules and things that have the force of law that are job destroying and economy destroying, they have no accountability. And while Lewis's bill, quite frankly, was welcome in terms of the transparency and accountability, I don't think it goes nearly far enough, because I simply do not believe that we should have unaccountable bureaucracies, whether that's at the city level, the state level, or even the federal level. And there is a lot of effort that may result in Supreme Court decisions and other cases happening to rein these unelected bureaucracies in. And it's absolutely critical for small d democracy.
Well, I tell you what, there's problems when that can happen and does take place, and there's nothing that anybody can do about it. So, well, and here's another example of that. The New Mexico Supreme Court won't hear GOP appeal on district maps, and Chief Justice Shannon Bacon signed an order with concurrence from all four justices, basically saying that partisan gerrymandering is permissible.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised by this, but it is, it's something that certainly highlights, I think, a different standard when it comes to gerrymandering for blue states versus red states. And, you know, the U.S. Supreme Court kind of allowed the camel's nose under the tent of a little more challenging of maps drawn by state legislatures. But that really, in my opinion, is going to be limited to southern conservative states of the former Confederacy, like Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, those types of places, where you're going to have big battles over the African-American vote and whether they are spread out into more different districts, or whether they are concentrated in a few smaller few districts, and who represents them and how much representation is given. In states like New Mexico, where it's a blue state legislature, they're pretty much given carte blanche still to act and to make, you know, these kind of partisan maps of partisan advantage. So I highly doubt that this will gain, even, you know, on a relatively good U.S. Supreme Court, which I know is the next step if they want to appeal. If the Republican Party of New Mexico wishes to appeal, they're going to have to take this all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. I just don't think that that is going to be a fruitful journey in terms of this particular map. And you know, it's expensive, and these legal challenges are time-consuming, and, you know, to a certain extent, folks like Yvette Harrell have to prepare for the possibility that something changes in the map that they're running for Congress. But I think if I was Yvette Harrell, I would move forward and continue under the impression that the district is what the district was in the last election, and that she should consider this a 50-50 toss-up race and see what she can do about Gabe Vasquez in 2024, a year from now, because I don't think the courts are going to touch this one. So, no surprise that the Democrats dominated, put their state Supreme Court, chose not to take this case up, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny, and you kind of alluded to it, Paul. It's kind of funny, here in New Mexico, we have the gerrymandering, and the Republicans, of course, were upset about that. You take a place like Kansas, where they did sort of the same thing, and the Democrats are crying foul and trying to do the same thing. And so, you know, it's like this. You either permit gerrymandering or you stop it. And nothing can be done, or you change the whole system. Instead of districts, you go by county. Just let it run.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know what the U.S. Supreme Court was thinking when they kind of gave the camel's nose under the tent. Obviously, the U.S. Supreme Court, you know, has to read based on, you know, constitutional principles of fairness, et cetera. But there's really no discussion in the Constitution because redistricting and the drawing of district lines is discussed in the Constitution, and it's really only focused on the legislature. And that's where that concept, I think it's called the unitary legislature, or the legislative prerogative of redistricting. And, you know, I don't know what the Supreme Court's thought process was, but the upshot is going to be that Republicans in those deep South districts will probably have to draw some districts that wind up going for the Democrats that would not. But New Mexico is going to be able to largely get away with doing whatever it wants to when it comes to Republicans. Now, this last redistricting cycle was the first time that the Republicans did not have a seat at the table, and so it really showed in how they split up Southeast New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
10 years prior, and then 10 years prior to that, you either had Gary Johnson or Susana Martinez at the table with the Democrats, and that resulted in, I think, more fair congressional district and legislative district. Quite frankly, if I was a Republican and I was empowered to take up a legal suit, I would be more inclined to have gone after the state Senate districts for the legislature, because the way they're manipulating those numbers and allocating more Republicans to those legislative seats was, I think, a bigger target potentially for a legal challenge. But, you know, it's always going to be an uphill struggle until the Republicans gain some, you know, influence in the courts.
And
that's kind of the ultimate where the rubber hits the road situation, is you got to get power in the courts before you change any of this stuff.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Well, it shows from the statement, beginning with the statement from Brian Egolf, we're going to change this so that Yvette Harrell never gets elected again. You know, he made that statement, and now this has come down to, in my opinion, has come down to, this is not about results. This is not about getting change. This is not about getting good things done. This is simply about maintaining and gaining power by the Democrats.
Yeah, and that's what redistricting has been used for yeah. decades. And that's okay. I'm honestly okay with that because it was on an even playing field. You either create a system that across the board, across the country, is completely apolitical somehow, which is pretty impossible, or you allow a system to work in the Machiavellian political process mm-hmm. that it was. Now the courts have opened up this kind of middle ground, which I think is going to only go in one direction because that's the way it normally goes.
Yeah.
And I'll just say, you know, we talked about it way back during the results of the 2022 election phase.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Yvette Harrell has a seat that she can win. It's not as favorable as it was, but there's no reason she can't win that seat. In fact, if the electorate in Otero County, in Lee County, and Eddy County, the portions that were her areas, because those got split unfairly, but they got split. If those areas of the state had turned out just at the statewide average, she would be the congresswoman today. Those are conservative areas of the state, and they, you know, the people there have to be educated, motivated, and they have to get their butts to the polls one way or the other. And, you know, I think looking ahead, you know, that is where the battle is going to be fought in the 2024 election. In terms of the Democrats were highly motivated in 2020 because they really despised Donald Trump, and they continue to despise Donald Trump. But I think a lot of Democrats are sitting out there at this point in time, and why you're seeing some of the polling data moving towards President Trump is because the Democrats are not so enthusiastic about Biden. They see him as being too old. They don't see him as being particularly effective. A lot of things have gone wrong for Biden. The economy is strong-ish, but inflation has really done a number on New Mexicans and Americans. Foreign policy disasters continue to crop up under Biden. Mm-hmm. Most Republicans would argue that's because he's been a weak leader, and people have taken advantage across the globe of that. You know, so will the Democrats be as motivated to get out to vote? And you won't have the COVID voting regime in place that kind of really changed the processes in the Democrats' favor. So, with less than a year now to the not only the presidential election, but to all members of New Mexico's legislature being up, we have a lot of fascinating trend lines to watch. And you know, I think a lot of people are shocked that Trump so far is looking very good at the polls nationally. But, you know, we've got a lot of legal cases and a lot of issues to look at before the election of 2024. So we'll see. But, you know, we're obviously mostly concerned about those legislative races and holding candidates accountable for their views on whether the governor should be able to by herself enact restrictions on gun rights, Second Amendment, and this Environmental Improvement Board and the gas cars, and whether the Democrats incumbents think that they should be able to enact these kinds of policies through an arbitrary board without the legislature having a say.
Yeah, well, when it comes to Yvette Harrell, I think what she needs to do, she needs to work the areas up north that she needs to work, but at the same time, she needs to work the part in southeast Kansas, telling these people, you have to get out and vote. If you don't vote, we don't win. Plain and simple.
Southeast Kansas, but
southeast New Mexico. Yes, yes, yeah. The redistricting didn't go that far. Yeah, just southeast New Mexico. Sorry about that.
That's okay. I know. Holidays, kids may be on the mind.
But, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's you need to get out in those areas. You're right. And I believe that, you know, the energy, the vote, you know, that's not a big group in Alamogordo, but Alamogordo is the Rock Rib conservative area, Otero County.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that election integrity and those kinds of things are big issues down there. But, you know, you got to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. You got to be able to be concerned about election integrity, have people in place monitoring election integrity. But you also got to get your people to the polls and vote, because the only way to actually institute things like voter ID and change the electoral process to be more accountable is to elect people who will do that.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Secretary of State is not up this cycle. We got to wait another 2 years for those statewide races, but you got to get your people out to the polls and work on election integrity. And you can't have people staying home saying, oh, my vote's not going to count because of Dominion machines. You've got to have people getting out to vote. Same for Lee and Eddy County. Those energy workers have more at stake than anybody else, arguably, in New Mexico over who represents that area in Congress. And we know Yvette Harrell will stand up for traditional energy sources for New Mexico's economy against the Biden administration's overreach. And we know that Dave Vasquez, while he tries to kind of play a middle ground in that competitive district, he's ultimately, his desire is to be a rubber stamp for Joe Biden or even to the left of Biden.
Well, he'll say things to make us think he's a moderate, but he votes to uphold the Biden administration. So that's just the way that that goes. Some people will disagree with me on that, but that's what I've seen on his voting. So,
yeah, there's been a few votes, but those votes are ones where he knows that the Senate, because it's a Democrat-controlled body, is going to take up the issue, or that it's a safe vote that he can get away with. You know, when push comes to shove, it's easy to tell where Gabe Vasquez stands on the issue. So, yeah, it's you know, we're every week we talk, we'll be a week closer to that election. It'll be here before we know it.
All right, that sounds good, Paul. We look forward to talking to you next week. So have yourself a good one, my friend. And I'm just going to ask you, the heck with the energy and stuff? You're putting lights up on the house?
Oh, yeah, we'll be doing that. So far, we've got some of the decorating done inside, but have not been able to embark upon the outside of the house. That'll come next weekend.
That's what I'm hoping for mine, too, next weekend. Paul, have yourself a great one, and we will talk to you again next Tuesday, okay?
Thanks, Mike.
You bet. Thank you. Paul Gissing with the Rio Grande Foundation.
We are Active Radio, 88.9 FM, KHII Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and 102.3 KEDU Ruidoso.